So some Rashi's for Parshas Acharemos. I'm actually recording this in Eretz Yisrael. It's Parshas Kedoshim. We're a week ahead, but knowing that some people are still in Chutz La'aretz reading Acharemos, I wanted there to be some Rashi's on what we in Eretz Yisrael see as last week's Parsha. So we're going a little backwards. Achor v'kedem mitzartani. So the beginning of the Parsha, Acharemos Shnei Bnei Aaron. It's very graphic, and you'd wonder, as we would say in colloquial language, why rub it in? Why raise the trauma? Sometimes when something traumatic occurs, a tragedy, it's best not to speak about it too much. The Gemara says in Ksuvos that when Rebbe died, you can imagine the void left by Rebbe's patira. So they said, Kol ha'omer Rebbe meis yidakir b'cherev. Anyone that says that Rebbe has died, he himself should be punished. And obviously, by denying or not speaking about Rebbe's death, they didn't expect to resuscitate him or to resurrect him, but it was just something that better left unspoken. So you can imagine the tragedy of the two sons of Aaron being incinerated on the day of HaKamas HaMishkan. And yet the Torah announces it. So Rashi, a very famous Rashi, says the obvious, but to explain the obvious, he quotes the story. Ma Talmud Lomar. He quotes Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Mashal lechola. It would be similar to a sick person who visits the doctor, and the doctor warns him against unhealthy lifestyle, unhealthy decisions, unhealthy behavior. That's not as compelling as if the doctor were to say, you see that person, he didn't listen to me. He ate what he shouldn't have eaten. He behaved as he shouldn't have behaved. Lo tamus kiderach shemeis poni. I don't want you to be ill or to die chas v'shalom in the manner that so-and-so did. Zez ziruzo yosimin harishon. It's obviously more compelling, more graphic, more illustrative if you point to an example. People who think about education and communication, so whenever you communicate an idea, it's always more powerful if you create an analogy or a metaphor or a story, rather than an abstract concepts. Concepts come and go, but associative statements are much more deeply absorbed. So instead of warning abstractly, the doctor would say, that person didn't adhere to my guidelines and passed or was ill. Now, this seems obvious. You don't need Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, you don't need Rashi to quote Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. And even if you want to make the point, you don't have to tell me a story about a doctor and a sick person and a previous person. Seems to a lot of elaboration and a lot of storytelling, and the point seems obvious. You have to dig a little deeper. I think that by raising the issue and by embedding it within a story, Elazar ben Azariah and Rashi are trying to highlight a very delicate balance. And that's the balance between discretion and prevention. Prevention is better served by being explicit, by being vivid, by saying things as they are, by being completely transparent. On the other hand, that could be insensitive. And discretion would demand you don't really speak about people who die, you don't really mention it. And in the end, you essentially have a dilemma, and throughout life we have to very, very delicately balance this dilemma between being too vivid and too expressive and too graphic, but being clear enough so that our point is conveyed. But it sounds like, in the end of the day, we rule in favor of prevention and practical measures and clarity, even at the cost of insensitivity and lack of discretion. In the end, between those two clashing principles, we'll rule in favor of prevention. And that's why Rashi has to quote a story, because it takes place every day in our Elazar ben Azariah. It's not some conceptual juggling of two different value systems. It's part of life. And it's not just a question of how to write the first pasuk of Acharemos. And in life, we'll encounter those dilemmas almost daily, and we have to try to be very, very careful about calibrating properly. But in the end of the day, this comes up a lot in many, many areas. I'm driving now, so I'm just not really thinking about all the models and examples, but one which just popped into my mind, chas v'shalom, rachmana litzlan, when a person takes their own life. So on the one hand, we want to be very, very protective and sensitive to the person, understand what they probably were going through. Certainly the family doesn't deserve to suffer, and they're the primary, or some of the primary victims of this crime. On the other hand, you want to be very explicit in referring to it as a crime without indicting the criminal, because that person is going through, obviously, psychological hell, psychological torture. Many, many other areas, and sexual abuse in our community. The more you talk about it sometimes, the more commonplace it becomes, the more you can feed people with. On the other hand, obviously, as we've learned the hard way, we want to be as transparent, and not transparent, of course we should be transparent, but as explicit as possible and provide honest information. So it's an interesting Rashi about a very important balancing act between, on the one hand, sensitivity to our own, and just not just to our own, but just even to people reading the Torah thousands of years later. People have died in very tragic fashion. Just, you don't talk about it. Don't talk about the dead. You certainly don't talk about people that died so tragically. On the other hand, Hashem is demonstrating to Aaron the delicacy of Beis HaMikdash and the fragility of standing before HaKadosh Baruch Hu and how it could all go south so quickly. So that's one interesting Rashi in Parshas Acharemos. Fast forwarding a little bit to the end of Parshas Acharemos, before the first Parsha of Arayos is listed, of sexual abstinence and illicit sexual interactions, the Torah introduces, you're entering the land of Israel, Kimasei Eretz Mitzrayim Asher Yishavtem Bo Lo Tasu, Uchamasei Eretz Kinan Asher Ani Meviyaschem Shem Bo Lo Tasu, Uvichukoseihem Lo Seilechu. Now this is obviously a very, very general introduction. You were in a foreign culture, you're entering a foreign culture. Alternatively, you are the Am Segula, you've been chosen. Part of being chosen is temperance and abstinence in general dietary laws and sexual behavior. But Rashi makes a point, both regarding the Egyptian culture and regarding the Canaanite culture. Both of these lands, the one they had lived in for 200 years and more than that, but and the one they were entering, weren't just foreign cultures, but they were particularly degenerate, particularly debauched. Now, it's unclear from Rashi whether they were particularly degenerate, morally decayed, in sexual matters or in general. Rashi's language is, Ma'aseim shel Mitzrayim shel Kenanim mikulkalim mikal ha'umos. Presumably it was about sexual frivolity, because that's the particular warning of the Torah in the end of Parshas Acharemos. We have that sense of the sexual frivolity of the Egyptians, probably stemming from Paro. We don't see it on display in Sefer Shmos. We see them as taskmasters, as persecutors, as anti-Semites. We don't necessarily see sexual frivolity. We see it in Parshas Lech Lecha when Avram visits Eretz Mitzrayim. Of course, Chazal speak about Shetufei Zima. It's not in the Psukim. Rashi doesn't talk about sexual matters per se, and it is fascinating to consider the relationship between a society which is totalitarian, which persecutes its weakest, which enslaves others, and how that affects marriage, respect for other human beings, respect for the institutions of marriage. It's fascinating to think about the overlap between those two. With Eretz Canaan, we certainly don't see anything in Pesukim because we don't really read that much about the people of Canaan. We know that they were paganistic. We know they didn't worship one god. This was the wild world of endless paganism. We see that on display in Sefer Shoftim, in Tanakh, where the Jewish people absorb some of that pagan influence. And there, too, it's interesting to think about the relationship between monotheism and sexual abstinence and value of family. But either way, it's not clear what Rashi is referring to, but he does highlight that the cultures that they had lived with and they were entering were particularly immoral, and this led to a particular challenge, distinct challenge for the Jewish people as they navigate their way towards religious maturity. Now, interestingly enough, when it comes to Mitzrayim, based on the double language, Kimasei Eretz Mitzrayim Asher Yeshavtem Ba, Why does the Torah say she'yishav din ba? It's redundant. We obviously lived in Egypt for 200 years. So Rashi says, not only was Egypt degenerate morally, ma'aseh mekukalim, but specifically Goshen. Ironically, the place that the Jews had inhabited, and specifically to remain insular, to separate, to maintain their national identity, that very location had probably become, I don't think that Yaakov and his children would have chosen that location, but had degenerated into a place of moral void and moral debauchery. Now, was that in part because of the persecution? That's where the persecution was felt, because the slaves were eviscerated, a family and identity. There was no backbone. It became a slum. And whenever there's financial inequality and lack of hope and lack of vision, it's harder for people to maintain family values and upstanding lives of responsibility and of duty. It's also fascinating when Goshen became that way and how it became that way. But either way, they lived in Goshen, which was at the heart of this moral rot of Egypt. And they were entering Eretz Yisrael, and of course the Torah to create symmetry. Kemase Eretz Mitzrayim Asher Yeshavtem Ba, Uchemase Eretz Kenan Asher Ani Mevi'eschem Shama. Now, what's fascinating about this isn't incidental. By the way, it just so happens that the Jewish people had terrible luck. Instead of living in a morally sound environment, unfortunately, sadly, who was just out of nowhere, incidentally, circumstantially, they happened to live not just in Egypt, the moral degenerate, the degenerate country, but they lived in the worst possible location, the city of sin in Egypt. And by the way, it could have been they were entering a land of morally upright people with moral integrity and probity. Just so happens Hashem is warning the Jewish people, by the way, be careful. You've fallen into a bad situation. Be careful not to be unduly influenced. This is not just incidental. This is not just chance. The Jewish people are meant to stand for Hashem in this world, and we're meant to stand for HaKadosh Baruch Hu in two major poles, monotheism and morality. We're meant to represent one Hashem. We're also meant to represent Parshas Kedoshim, Parshas Acharemos. Kedoshim Tihu V'skadishtem. Kadosh doesn't mean holy. Kadosh means separate. To live in this world, to interact with this world, to participate in this world, but to be a little bit separate and distant and detached. And that detachment from the world of physical engagement is manifest, is expressed through limited foods and limited sexual contact. Healthy, responsible in both instances, but limited. And in order for us to deliver this message to the world, not just to live our own lives that way, we have to encounter, we have to face off, we have to defeat, we have to vanquish morally, and in some cases, actually geographically, cultures and communities and societies that have fallen into the pit of immoral debauchery. So part of our experience in Mitzrayim was not just to forge ourselves as a nation, suffer for Mechiras Yosef, but to defy Egyptian culture and have an impact on Egyptian culture, which is why in the end of Parshas Bo, as the redemption is starting to gather steam, most Egyptians, if you took a poll, most Egyptians admire the Jewish people, side with the Jewish people. Moshe is a popular, his polls are rising. Pyro's popularity ratings are sinking very quickly. So evidently, when the Jewish people left Mitzrayim, there was an impact culturally that the Jewish people had on the Egyptians. And presumably this cultural impact cascaded to other cultures and other countries and other empires because the Egyptians were central to the ancient cultural scene, so pivotal, so influential. Now, in the case of Canaan, there wasn't that much of an influence as much as a replacement. And again, to the modern era, which has become sensitized to ethnic cleansing, as we should be, into genocide, into war, into, especially I'm recording this in Yom HaShoah, it seems very harsh, and it certainly doesn't accord with our modern conventions. If we imagine ourselves, let's say, settling the land in the 21st century, we don't, God forbid, cleanse the land and evict people and chas v'shalom murder people, chalila v'chas. But in those days, on a one-off point of history, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted us not just to convert and inspire, but to reboot Eretz Canaan and to give people the chance to leave the land peacefully as the Girgashi chose. Of course, in most cases, they didn't choose, and it led to violence, which HaKadosh Baruch Hu mandated and demanded of us in those days. But this entire scene in the end of Parshas Acharemos is not a, oh, shucks, it's just too bad. We lived in Mitzrayim. We're entering Canaan. We wish it would have been different. This is our role in history. Our role in history is to stand for moral behavior, to stand for Kedusha, to try to help others translate our Kedusha of 613 into their Kedusha of 7. And it's coming to the fore as HaKadosh Baruch Hu warns them about sexual guidelines and sexual mores, to remind them these aren't just designated to the Jewish people for their own moral probity and moral nobility, but because we're meant to eradicate and to defeat cultures that have sunken into this moral abyss or this moral mess. One other quick Rashi. The ensuing pasuk speaks about fulfilling mitzvos, both mishpatim and chukos, es mishpatai tasu v'schukosai tishmu. But then again, an extra phrase, lo lechas bohem, ani Hashem elokechem. So Rashi highlights on the phrase, lo lechas bohem, al ti pater mitocham. Don't disengage from Torah and mitzvos. Shelo tomar, you shouldn't reason, lamadati chochmas Yisrael. I've already studied chochmas Yisrael. Eilech ve'elmad chochmas ha'umos. I want to go learn the chochma of the other nations. Now, this is obviously a hot potato issue in the modern context. And someone could interpret this Rashi to mean you're not supposed to study anything outside of Torah. That would be an interesting position and a defensible position, a position that many God-fearing Jews adopt, but certainly not the way Rashi intended this message, nor the inference from the pasuk. The pasuk speaks about lo leches bohen, to follow, to walk. It's the same word as lelechas. It means to reroute yourself, to step out of one context and one framework and one path and choose a different path. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu is warning us, don't abandon the mishpatai and the chukosai, lelechas bohem, to change lanes, to shift into a different reality. And Rashi's picking up on this shift of lelechas. Al ti parter mitocham. Don't walk away from Torah. Shelo tomar, you shouldn't say, okay, I've already finished the Torah, I've already finished the mitzvos. Eilech, again, Rashi inserts that word. I will go, I will move, I will migrate to a different space, into a different condition, into a different reality. So you could make the argument either way about whether studying secular studies is a waste of time, isn't a waste of time, is dangerous, is not dangerous, is useful, is not. Those are all legitimate concepts. But Rashi's not talking about that. Rashi's talking about someone who abandons Torah and walks somewhere else and shifts lanes to somewhere else, and he prefers non-Torah studies and displaces Torah studies by his Torah studies. Now, this is obviously a danger, and a danger which I think a lot of people who subscribe to the concept, to the values, to, I'm not into slogans and phrases, but a lot of people who live their lives based on what they feel is Torah Mada, that phrase creates the following danger. It suggests or implies equality or symmetry, and symmetry invites choice. Well, I'll choose Torah and I'll choose Mada. And Mada is a legitimate choice at the expense of Torah, rather than seeing them as one integrated synthesis. And if you believe that general studies will enhance, or general encounters will enhance your religious identity, will enhance your spirituality. So that's what Rashi is referring to. Someone says, I don't need to learn Torah. I'm reading other works, other ideas of value, of moral interest, of even of religious value, of historical value. That's what Rashi's battling. Don't displace, don't supplant, don't replace. Lo lechas bohem eilech ve'elmad. What's also interesting, being that it's Rav Aaron Lichtenstein's Yard Site on Sunday, and I'll be speaking about the Yard Site, is I never heard Rav Lichtenstein use the following word. This is a bit of a sidebar, but it is interesting. I think a lot of people who do quote non-Torah sources, whether they be high culture, Shakespeare, philosophy, or they just be examples from non-Torah, non-Jewish experience, you often hear the word lahavdil, 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 which I think is their way of creating space and creating barriers and creating distance between the two realms. This is not a word I heard too often from Rav Lichtenstein, if at all. I think I heard it once. I think Rav Lichtenstein, my experience was,
wasn't a Torah Amada, it was a Torah Otara. He was fixed powerfully in the world of Torah and Yerushalayim, but he was a humanist, and as a humanist, he believed deeply in other human beings, in their nobility, their virtue, in their wisdom, and if they had interesting things to say that could dovetail and enhance his religious pursuit, he read them. And he didn't see this as a departure. He didn't see this as a deviation. He didn't see this as, well, now moving to a different realm, and to note or to denote that migration to a different realm, I'll use the word lahavdil. So I stood before HaKadosh Baruch Hu, ana avdecha jibrichu, trying to improve my moral character. If great people who had great thoughts, who I trust deeply and I believe in them, had interesting things to say about issues that, quite frankly, Chazal didn't talk about because they were too busy with more important issues of decoding the intricacies of Hilchos Shabbos, the intricacies of Maseches Yevamos. So why not hear what other people have to say about culture, or secularization, religion, relationship with Hashem, commitment, obedience, history, whatever issue Rav Lichtenstein was probing. So getting back to the Rashi, Rashi is not warning against studying secular studies. Rashi is warning against abandoning or severing yourself in the pursuit of Torah while you study secular studies, and suggesting that it's multiple choice and I'll study one in place of the other, rather than investing massively in Torah. And for those who feel that non-Torah sources can also be helpful, spending whatever time they feel is appropriate, enriching their spiritual lives by studying. So three very interesting Rashis in Parshas Zecharimos. One Rashi about the balance between discretion and prevention. One Rashi that the Jewish people had departed a moral void and were entering a moral carnival. And this isn't incidental, but it's integrated into Jewish mission. And then finally, Rashi is not warning against studying non-Torah texts. He's warning against lelechas, elech ve'elmad, about substituting one for the other. Shabbat shalom to whoever is listening to this, perhaps in Chutz La'aretz. And Ritz Hashem, we're waiting for you to catch up with us in Eretz Yisrael.